First Baptist Church of Redmond, July 4th, 2021, Ecclesiastes Chapter 5. One who loves money will not be satisfied with money.
Can you join me reading Ecclesiastes 5:9? After all, a king who cultivates the field is beneficial to the land. You may be seated.
No, I didn't list this verse for Emily Bird, but I'll apply it and make it understandable. Our topic in Ecclesiastes is found in chapter 5, verses 8 and 12, 8 through 12. It'll be expanded in next Sunday's message, but it's titled, One Who Loves Money Will Not Be Satisfied with Money. Stefan Breitwiser. Have you heard of him? You should have. Stefan Breitwiser is perhaps the most prolific art thief in history. The Frenchman has robbed more than $1.4 billion worth of art from nearly 200 museums, and steals like he is performing a magic trick without violence or having to practice a getaway. When this 47-year-old Breitwiser sees a piece he likes, he says, quote, I get smitten. Looking at something beautiful, I can't help but weep, end quote. He never sells anything he steals, but simply brings the piece home so he can adore it. Quote, the pleasure of having, he says, is stronger than the fear of stealing, end quote. He became hooked after lifting an antique pistol from a French museum at the age of 22. And by the early 2000s, he averaged a theft every 2 weeks. His trick? He acts as casually as possible and waits for the guards, clerks, to be distracted, sometimes slipping paintings under his oversized coat while on guided museum tours. He does it in plain sight. He did many heists with his longtime girlfriend, who'd cough softly when someone approached, as he actually unscrewed display cases with a small Swiss Army knife. In an art fair in Holland, Breitwiser had someone shout, thief! And turned to see security guards tackling another burglar. He nabbed a painting amid the commotion. Arrested as imprisoned several times, Breitwiser was caught yet again last month by French police. They discovered Roman coins and other objects in his home, allegedly taken from museums in France and Germany. What does he say? Art has punished me, end quote. He is tempted by the experience of having, possessing. What's another word for it? Covetousness, lust, the desire to have. I'm giving an overview because our passage has a lot of ambiguities in it, the line of reasoning and the explanations for the verse I read needs some discussion. Essentially, money matters. Money is the subject of oppression, dissatisfaction, and frustration. Solomon says, eat or rather consume, is used in 5:11, 12, 17, 18, and 19. Solomon uses the word to refer to the consumption of goods or, quote, one's attempt to survive or make a living. If you see oppression of the poor and denial of justice and righteousness in the province, do not be shocked at the sight. For one official watches over another official, and there are higher officials over them. The first principle has to do with influence and control of the rich over the poor. The rich tend to take charge. In any situation, tend to control. In other words, the rich tend to take charge, and their power intimidates and offends the poor. The rich and poor, the rich and powerful, often oppress the poor. Solomon says that's just the way it is, and that's right. The rich can, the poor cannot afford themselves support. They cannot afford themselves aid. They cannot afford themselves an attorney. When official watches over another, for the poor, justice grinds too slowly, costing them more money. The poor need a quick resolution because they can't afford the attorney costs. They cannot afford to wait in their situation and cannot afford to speed up the process of adjudication. I was surprised to find out the rich steal more than the poor. Evidence suggests that the rich steal more than the poor. Although shoplifting transcends categories, the rich actually do steal more value than the poor. A study cited most often in the American Journal of Psychology states that people with incomes of $70,000 shoplift 30% more than those earning $20,000 a year. A federal lawyer proved that point when she was caught swiping $257.99 worth of cosmetics from a store in Virginia. More recently, Sergeant Ava Pena of the New York Police Department was suspended from her job after she was allegedly caught stealing clothing valued at $359 from Macy's. This wasn't a crime of poverty. Pena, whose salary is over $100,000 a year, six figures, drove to court in her white Mercedes-Benz to hinder her not guilty plea. Psychologist Staten Samenow tells of a patient he's treated several years ago. He had more than enough money to buy the item. He took it for the thrill of it, to outsmart the establishment. He enjoyed every aspect of shoplifting, scanning the aisles for objects, looking for the exits, trying to outsmart the surveillance and store personnel, and the theft and the getaway. This was all about excitement and building up self-worth. One theory suggests that low-income people are less likely to cheat and steal because they are more invested in their communities and fear being publicly humiliated. Conversely, the rich harbor feelings of entitlement and self-interest, which weakens their moral compass. One more thing. the word denial. If you see oppression of the poor and denial of justice, denial is the Hebrew word for robbery. Solomon can soberly tell his audience not to be amazed when justice and righteousness are violently taken away. Justice covers just decisions. Righteousness is a personal quality that you are fair. Both tend to be lost in evil days. I come to our verse 9. After all, a king who cultivates the field is beneficial to the land. What is that talking about? It's specifically talking about, I think, an event from Jewish history. A king who cultivates. All benefit from a king under whose reign private owners can profit cultivating the land. Private ownership employs people and sells a product, and they're successful. In other words, the king does not seize it for himself. What story am I thinking of? What Sunday school story am I thinking of? Yes. In the case of Ahab and Naboth's vineyard. The king who honors God and people is doing something right when he's just and controls himself. One who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor one who loves abundance with his income. This too is futility. Solomon knew this subject like few others. He was the wisest man, but he was one of the wealthiest people of his era. When he says it won't satisfy, he ought to know. Nor one who loves abundance with his income. In other words, greed and materialism have no built-in safeguard or satisfying limits. There used to be a commercial, too much is never enough. And Solomon agrees with its truth. Loves is the word Solomon uses. One who loves money, not possesses money. Scripture does not attack wealth. There are many wealthy Christians even today. Abraham was a superior wealthy man, and Solomon, in his glory, was wealthy. But Scripture attacks loving money. This is an attack on greed, openly assaulting the one who only wants more, more, more. To the money hungry, there is never enough. When good things increase, those who consume them increase. So what is the advantage to their owners except to look at them, to glance at them? With increased money and possessions comes an accelerated number of people and worries. More money, more people. More people, more worries. More worries, less sleep. The sleep of the laborer, my mind first went to Fred Flintstone. The sleep of the laborer is sweet, whether he eats little or, like Fred, eats much. But the full stomach of the rich person does not allow him to sleep. Take, for example, a guy who punches in at 7 a.m. and punches out at 3:30 p.m. He drives his pick-em-up truck home. He helps coach his kids' ball team. He has a great time. He's known as a fun-loving working-class man. He eats a bowl of Fritos, watches something before bed, and drops off to sleep. Within seconds, 60 seconds, he's snoring. But the rich, they've got a lot of stuff on their minds. What do the rich have to think about, have to worry about, have to be concerned about? Your turn. What do the rich have to be concerned about? Losing their wealth. Their balance? No. Taxes. Yes. Whether somebody's cheating them. They need a lot of advice from attorneys, officials, and I hear that attorneys cost a lot, but officials might cost a lot. As Solomon says, the full stomach of the rich person does not allow him to sleep. He's got too much to think about. He's forever preoccupied. What is missing? Peace of mind. He can't even enjoy a restful night of sleep. For us, kings and leaders should ensure that justice prevails. The broken window theory. If you break a window and you don't fix it, more things bad will happen to the building. But if you fix the building, if you fix the lights, if you fix the broken window, people are attentive usually and stop making it an eyesore. Scripture tells the believers to engage in introspection in 1 Corinthians 11:28, 2 Corinthians 13:5, and Galatians 6:4. It is the Lord doing it if we get out of the way. We shouldn't get in the way of God. We should work to cooperate with God and listen to God and watch for God's words. In 2018, Harvard Business School took a first-of-its-kind study. It studied 4,000 millionaires in the United States. Didn't know there were so many. 4,000 millionaires in the United States, asking them to report about how much money would make them happy. Each millionaire was asked to report how much they currently have, how happy they were on a scale of 1 to 10, and then how much money they thought they would need to get a 10 on the happiness scale. Shockingly, the largest response was assigned to 10 times more. The largest possible option given. 24% choose 5 times more, followed by 23% at 2 times more. Only 13% of the respondents say they currently have enough to be happy. Perhaps most surprisingly of all, this answer was consistent no matter how much money a person had. This means that someone with $100 million was just as likely as the person with $10 million to select the box that indicated they would need 10 times as much money to be truly happy. In an interview with The Atlantic, lead researcher Michael Norton suggested that the problem so many millionaires have is, in comparison, the question of happiness is not so much, do I have enough, but do I have more than those around me. Norton concluded, if a family amasses $50 million but moves into a neighborhood where everyone has more money, they still won't be happy. All the way up the spectrum of wealth, basically everybody says they need two or three times as much to be perfectly happy.